to the last chapter of John's Gospel. So let's turn to John chapter 21 and let's hear the Word of God. Afterwards, Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. Or that's the Sea of Galilee. It happened this way. Simon Peter, Thomas, called Didymus, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples were together. I'm going out to fish, Simon Peter told them. And they said, we'll go with you. So they went out, got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. He called out to them, friends, haven't you any fish? No, they answered. He said, throw your net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some. When they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. Then the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, it is the Lord! As soon as Simon Peter heard him say, it is the Lord, he wrapped his outer garment round him, for he had taken it off, and jumped into the water. The other disciples followed in the boat, towing the net full of fish, for they were not far from shore, about 100 yards. When they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals there with fish on it, and some bread. Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish you've just caught. Simon Peter climbed aboard and dragged the net ashore. It was full of large fish, 153, but even with so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, come and have breakfast. None of the disciples dare ask him, who are you? They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came, took the bread and gave it to them, and did the same with the fish. This was now the third time Jesus appeared to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. When they'd finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these? Yes, Lord, he said, you know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my lambs. Again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me? He answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said, take care of my sheep. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my sheep. I tell you the truth. When you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, follow me. Peter turned and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved was following them. This was the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper and had said, Lord, who is going to betray you? When Peter saw him, he asked, Lord, what about him? Jesus answered, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me. Because of this, the rumor spread among the brothers that this disciple would not die. But Jesus did not say that he would not die. He only said, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? This is the disciple who testifies to these things and who wrote them down. We know that his testimony is true. Jesus did many other things as well. If every one of them were written down, I suppose that even the whole world would not have room for the books that would be written. Amen, and may God bless his word to us today. Have you ever been reading a book? You've worked out the plot. You come to the end. And then you discover there's another chapter. It's a bit like that with John's Gospel, isn't it? Chapters 13 to 19 have been taken up with the 24 hours leading up to Jesus' dead body being laid in that garden tomb. Chapter 20, which we looked at last week, gives the record of the empty tomb, of the risen Jesus' appearances to Mary in the garden, to the disciples in the upper room, and then a week later, to the disciples again, with Thomas present with them. They were convinced Jesus was alive. And the chapter ends with words that have been quoted many times in our studies. John's purpose for writing. The end of chapter 20, Jesus did many other miraculous signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written, that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and by believing, you may have life in his name. Well, surely that's the end of the book, isn't it? Jesus is alive. And John has made his appeal that we'll believe and have life. But then we discover there's another chapter. John's move to tell us more. There's more we need to hear about Jesus. And that's what we're looking at this morning. According to John, this is a record of Jesus' third appearance to his disciples. The first was in the upper room on the resurrection day. The second, same place a week later. This is the third. And here John is showing us, in the title of this morning's sermon, Jesus the Restorer. Jesus the Restorer. Verses 1 to 14, Jesus restores his disciples into fellowship with himself. And verses 14 to 23, Jesus restores Peter as the leader of the disciple band. First of all, then, let's look at how Jesus restored these disciples back into fellowship with himself. It's several days now since Jesus' second appearance in the upper room. And seven of the disciples decide to go for a night's fishing on Lake Galilee. You'll notice in that list that Thomas is with them. He seems to have learned his lesson, doesn't he? Before, when he'd left the disciples, he'd missed seeing Jesus. He wasn't going to make that mistake again. He was going to stay with them. We might wonder what these disciples were doing in Galilee. But according to Matthew's gospel, Jesus had told his disciples to go to Galilee where he would see them. What's more, they were from this area anyway. This was their home. And a fishing trip, well, surely that was good therapy for them, wasn't it? When you consider all they'd been through. There'd been all the excitement of Palm Sunday. There'd been that very emotional Passover meal. They were at the depths of despair on Good Friday. 3 days later, the staggering news that Jesus was alive. Well, fishing was something they knew about, something they could do. And anyway, they needed some money, I guess. They needed to eat. Apparently night was the best time for fishing on that lake. But all that night, they caught nothing. So much for being good therapy. I think it made them feel worse than ever. Something they thought they were good at, they couldn't even do that anymore. As they returned towards the shore in the dim morning light, a stranger calls to them. They didn't recognize that it was Jesus. I don't really guess they expected to see him there. Haven't you caught any fish? Try on the right side and you'll catch some. Now, some of my parishioners in Helmsdale were fishermen. I'm sure they wouldn't have appreciated advice from someone on the shore telling them what to do any more than these fishermen did. But for some reason, they did what the stranger said, And they made this astonishing catch. It's fascinating, isn't it, how Peter and John reacted in exactly the same way that they'd done in the previous chapter at the empty tomb. You read here that John immediately recognized Jesus. "It is the Lord," he said. In the previous chapter, it was John who saw and believed. Peter here is moved to action. He jumps into the water. In the previous chapter, it was Peter who, on arrival at the tomb, went straight in to find out for himself. Well, once ashore, they discovered that Jesus had provided for them. A cooked breakfast awaited them. Jesus invited them to contribute from their catch, and then he invited them to breakfast. And they eat with him, and it seems there were periods of awesome silence. They daren't ask him who he was. They knew. They didn't need to ask. But I wonder what they were thinking as they ate breakfast together. Surely their minds would go back to that same lake 3 years previously. They'd only met Jesus a few times when he asked to use Simon Peter's boat as a sort of floating pulpit from which he would teach the crowds on the shore. When he finished, he told Simon to put out into the deep water and to let down his net for a catch. "We've worked all night," Peter replied. "We've caught nothing. But because you say so, I'll let down the nets." And you know what happened. They caught so many fish that their partners in the other boat, James and John, had to come. And they filled both boats with the fish. Later that very day, they left everything and they followed Jesus. As they thought about that, not only was Jesus alive, but he was able to do the same sort of things as before. He was still able to work miracles. He was the same Lord. Seeing Jesus take the bread and the fish and give it to them, did their minds go back to that day when Jesus had taken bread and fish, just a little bit from a boy's packed lunch, and given it to the disciples? They'd given it to the crowd, and 5,000 people had a meal together. Jesus was still able to provide for their needs. He even had a meal ready for them and invited them to come and eat with him. The invitation to share a meal has a larger significance in the East than just a simple social pleasure. It implies an invitation to fellowship, to the communion of hearts. Hadn't Jesus promised his disciples that after the little while he was taken from them, he would come back to be with them? Chapter 16. This relationship, whilst not the same as before, was just as real and satisfying. Jesus himself will come and make his home among them. They're not going to be abandoned as orphans. And as they saw him take bread and give it to them, did their minds not go back just a few weeks to that last meal they'd eaten together, when Jesus had taken bread and said, "This is a symbol of my body broken for you"? I wonder if they saw the print of the nails in his hands as he gave them the bread, a reminder that his body had been broken for them on the cross. Yeah, I guess all these things were going through their minds as they sat and ate breakfast together. But do you see what Jesus was doing? How Jesus the Restorer was restoring these dispirited, downcast disciples back into fellowship with himself? how he was reassuring them. He really was alive. He still knew all about them. He was still the same, able to work miracles. He did care for them in very practical ways. He really did want to be their friends. He really did want them to be in fellowship with him. And he'd done everything that was needed to be done to make that fellowship possible. Jesus, the restorer, appeared that day to restore the disciples into fellowship with himself. And they were restored, weren't they? They knew from now on that Jesus was with them always. Then in verse 15, Jesus singles out Simon Peter. Do you remember those days at school when things hadn't been going all that well and the teacher would come up and sit down beside you and say, "Now, my boy, we've got some things to talk about, haven't we?" Well, Peter felt a bit like that, I think. Although he'd apparently led that fishing trip, I guess that Peter was feeling a real failure. He'd made great promises about being willing to die for Jesus. But when Jesus was arrested, he'd run off like the rest of them. When he did follow into the high priest's courtyard, what did he do? He denied 3 times that he even knew Jesus, and that to a slip of a servant girl. And when the cock crowed that night, Peter remembered Jesus' warning, went out brokenhearted. We saw last week, Peter was one of the first to see the empty tomb, but Peter didn't really know what to believe. He was given a message from an angel that Jesus was alive. Later that day, he saw Jesus. A week later, he met him again. But then nothing. And as he led the disciples fishing trip, he must have been wondering about his own future, mustn't he? What was he going to do? Would Jesus really have time for him? He must have been reassured by Jesus' appearance that morning, by that large catch of fish, by that invitation to breakfast, by being restored to fellowship. But what about his future? Did Jesus really want Peter? I think Peter was probably thinking about his failure, because in verse 9 we're told that there at the breakfast there was a fire of burning coals, literally a charcoal fire. It's the same word that's used in chapter 18, verse 18, of the fire in the high priest's courtyard, where Peter had been warming himself that night he denied Jesus. I'm sure Jesus had arranged that on purpose, to remind Peter of his threefold denial. Well, after breakfast, Jesus came to Simon Peter. He called him by his name, not his old name, Simon. And he proceeded to ask him a question. Same question, 3 times. It's clear that Jesus, far from overlooking Peter's failure, was wanting him to face up to it. The question was, "Do you love me?" Not, "Are you sorry?" Not, "Are you going to do better?" Not, "What are you going to do now, Peter?" No, "Do you love me?" That's the important thing. "You denied me 3 times, Simon, and I'm asking you 3 times, do you love me?" The first time, you notice, Jesus asked, "Do you love me more than these?" Now that could mean, do you love me more than you love these men? Or more than you love these things, this fishing gear? Or it could mean, do you love me more than these men love me? That's what Peter had implied earlier, wasn't it? When Jesus had said they would all forsake him, Peter said, "Even if they all fall away on account of you, I never will. You can count on me, Jesus." But he'd failed. He had fallen away. Jesus came to him and asked him, "Simon, do you really love me more than these other disciples do?" And three times, Peter, no longer impetuous, said, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." No mention of the others. He's not comparing himself to the others anymore. He'd learnt that lesson. All he knew was that he really did love Jesus. Jesus was the most important person in his life. Jesus was first in his life. Jesus was going to have his total allegiance. You see, Jesus didn't want to know if he was sorry. He didn't want to hear any more fine promises. All he wanted to know, all he wanted the others and us to know, was that Peter loved him. Not only did Jesus ask Peter a question three times, he told him what to do three times. Each time Peter said he loved Jesus, Jesus told him, "Feed my lambs, take care of my sheep, feed my sheep." So having established that he loved Jesus, Jesus is here restoring Peter to his role as leader of the disciples. He's reinstating him. He's giving him the job of shepherd, leader of the flock. He's saying, "Peter, your love for me must be expressed in action and attitude towards my people." Now, in one sense, it's easy to love Jesus, isn't it? He's altogether lovely. It's not always easy to love his sheep, his people. They're far from perfect. Some are stubborn. Some butt you at every turn. Some have got horns. Some may even bite. Peter's being told that he must love and care for them too. And he's told it three times. His love for Jesus must be expressed towards all Jesus' people, all of them, the lambs and the sheep. And it must cover all their needs, feeding and taking care of them. Feeding and taking care covers all that a shepherd does. "Jesus," Peter's saying, "I do have a place for you, all right. You're to be the leader of the early church. You're to be the shepherd of my flock." There's a third thing that Jesus told Peter that morning as he restored him. Having asked about his love, having instructed him what to do, Jesus, thirdly, issued a command that was to establish a pattern for Peter's life. Verse 19, he said, "Follow me." Verse 22, "You must follow me." "Peter, you love me. I'm first in your life. I'm giving you a job of shepherd in the flock. But Peter, you must follow me. You must keep on following me." Now, those were the very first words that Jesus had spoken to Peter 3 years ago at the very same lake. Oh, so much had happened since then. But the same command applies. Follow me. What did it mean to follow Jesus? Well, it meant to stay close to him. It meant going where he goes. It meant doing what he does. It meant keeping in step with him. Not rushing ahead, doing your own thing, not lagging behind, doing nothing. In fact, in these verses, Jesus says three things to Peter that he'd need to remember in following him. First, "Peter, it'll be very costly." Verse 18, Jesus indicates the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Jesus is speaking here about a martyr's death. To stretch out the hands is often used to indicate crucifixion. Tradition has it Peter was crucified head downwards in Rome because he was a Christian. "Peter, It'll be very costly, this following me. Secondly, Peter, don't be distracted. Verse 20, we read that Peter saw John following them. What about him, Lord? He asked. And Jesus replied, in effect, that's none of your business. You must follow me. Don't be distracted. Don't go looking at others. And thirdly, Jesus said, in following me, remember, I am returning. Verse 22. Keep that in mind, Peter. As you follow me, remember, I am coming back. I am coming back, just as I promised. How did Jesus, the restorer, restore Peter? He asked him a question. Do you love me? He gave him instructions. Feed and care for my sheep. And he issued a command, follow me. And Peter was restored, wasn't he? He was the leader of the early church. He was the rock. Just weeks later, back in Jerusalem, it was Peter who preached on the day of Pentecost. And 3,000 souls were added to the church. Peter was restored, all right. Now, friends, the living Jesus is here again this morning. Last week, we thought about Jesus calling us by name, calling us to trust him, calling us to accept all that he'd done for us, calling us to be his disciples, calling us to be Christians. I guess most of us in church are Christians. Some of us have been Christians for years. We've had the privilege of hearing about Jesus since we were babies. Others of us came to Jesus as students. Others, perhaps in later life. Most of us, I guess, are followers of Jesus. But I guess many of us aren't as sure about Jesus as we once were. Many of us have been influenced by the world around us. Many of us are full of doubts and fears. Is Jesus really alive? Will he really keep his promises? Does he really want me? Aren't we a bit like those disciples as they set out on that fishing trip on Galilee? Well, Jesus is here this morning as the restorer. Is there a Peter here this morning? You set out years ago full of zeal and enthusiasm for Jesus. You'd do anything for him. Perhaps he called you to some specific work in the church. But then things have happened. There were those pressures at work. There was that upset in the family. Those friends let you down. People in the church so disappointed you. And you let the Lord down. You've drifted away from him. Oh, you keep coming to church. Perhaps over the past few weeks, the Lord has spoken to you several times. You don't doubt Jesus is alive, but does he have a place for you, you're wondering? Does he still want you after you've let him down so much? And perhaps this morning, Jesus is speaking to you by name, Peter, Simon. All he wants to know is, do you really love him? Do you? If you do, if he's first in your life, if he's before anyone and anything else, then he will restore you. He will. He'll give you that work to do. And all you have to do is to keep on following him, keep on keeping close to him, whatever the cost, Whatever anybody else is doing doesn't matter. You must follow Jesus. Do you really love him? But we're not all Peters here, are we? There were 6 others in the boat that day. There were 6 others had breakfast with Jesus. There was Thomas the doubter. There was Nathaniel. There were the famous James and John. There were 2 others, unnamed, ordinary people. And Jesus that morning restored them all to fellowship with himself. Now they didn't deserve that, did they? They certainly hadn't earned it. He knew the state of their hearts. And Jesus came to them that morning and he invited them all to that meal, reminding them that he was alive. He's all powerful. He cares for them. He wants them all in fellowship with himself. And Jesus the Restorer is here today. He knows all about you and me. He knows how mixed up we are. And today he's inviting us who believe in him. He's inviting us to a meal. Not of bread and wine, not of bread and fish, but of bread and wine. It's a meal that reminds us of his love for us, of his commitment to us, of all that he went through for us. And just as a meal is a sign of fellowship, so is this. Jesus wants us. He wants to share himself with us. He wants us to be in fellowship with him. Having a meal together is a family thing, isn't it? It's a sign we belong to the family. And Jesus invites us to this meal, this morning. He's the restorer. And perhaps there are several here this morning. You need to be restored to fellowship with the Lord. Well, he invites you. Come and eat. And be restored to fellowship with me. Let's sing our communion hymn. 652. In memory of the Saviour's love, we keep the sacred feast, where every humble, contrite heart is made a welcome guest. By faith we take the bread of life, by which our souls are fed, and drink the token of his blood that was for sinners shed.